I have a talk plan for this evening. But before I get started, I really want to put something in the room that I think that I would be remiss if I didn't. And that is the tragedy that happened in New Zealand. Because I know if I have felt it this strongly, we all have. And I think it's important for us not to turn our eyes away. It's way too easy. Because there's way too many things going on, almost on a regular basis. I ran across a quote I want to read to you and share. It's from the book, A Long Walk to Freedom. No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. And if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. You know, we gather into this practice, all of us here in the room, to actually awaken. Awaken to the harm that's happening in the world. And for some, it could almost be another one. You know, I don't want to watch the news. But I think it's imperative that we do exactly what this path is demanding of us, and that is to stay awake. Stay awake to the conditions that have caused this type of hate, not just here in the United States, but across the world. And we're seeing it more and more. And, you know, the other day I was trying to stay away from all the news feeds, but there I was, caught up. Like a deer, and you know, I just couldn't get away from it. And I realized that my heart was quivering. That there was something about this hate that it's almost unbearable. Because that's not what that's not how I grew up, and that's not what I've taught my son, and that's not what I'm going to teach my grandson. And yet, it's taught. It's not something that we come in here with. So I just needed to bring that into the room. And before I start my talk, I want to read one more piece. It's from the Elders of a Hopi Nation. You have been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people that this is the hour. And there are things to be considered. Where are you living? What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relations? Where is your water? Know your garden. It's time to speak your truth. Create your community. Be good to each other, and do not look outside yourself for the leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they're being torn apart, and they will suffer greatly. Know the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. See who is in there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that you do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for. So I offer that to you, the elders of the Arizona Hopi Nation, because this is a time not to turn away. Just keep our eyes open. And more importantly, keep our hearts open, even though it's really difficult to do. So I thank you for allowing me to put this in the room this evening. It has been on my heart. Difficult times we're in, isn't it? Tonight's talk is on wise speech. That flow. As the Buddha spoke to his monks about the essence of the Eightfold Path, he said, "And what, monks, is right speech? Abstinence from false speech. Abstinence from malicious speech. Abstinence from harsh speech. Abstinence from idle chatter. This is called right speech." We may have heard it in a lot of different ways, but this is actually from the text. And one area that we actually experience unskillful speech is not just what we say to someone else, but what we say to ourselves. It's that internal chatter. You know. It's the dialogue that goes on. It's the constant naysaying carried out on our behalf. Or the lack of it. And as much as we attempt to bring our attention to that inner voice, that chatter, and not attach ourselves to it, we seem to be, it's like a fly to light. We just, or a moth to light, I think it's called. A fly to something else. Anyway. Honey. A bee to honey. We seem to be driven towards it. This with vigor. Oh, okay, there it goes. And doesn't it feel like at times that we're kind of even in a lack of control about it? I mean, we could be sitting, right? And here it is. Chatter, 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 chatter. Chatter, chatter, chatter. Okay, I got to breathe. Okay, back to my chatter, 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 chatter. Kind of losing that bit of control. That inner voice that seems to have a little bit more. And for me, it happens when I'm really sitting in uncertainty. Or I'm sitting in the mystery of something. Or more importantly, I want the outcome to be the way I want it. So it's chatter, 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 chatter. I've got to develop this. I've got to make this. I have to make the plan. My former career was an accountant. Yeah, I know. Go figure. So I literally have a budget for my budget, right? And so, chatter, chatter, chatter. Did that foot? Right? Did that eight? Okay, chatter, chatter. Oh, right. Make sense? And also, it's the multiple of complexities that hit our lives. It could be what we just talked about, the world, the pot that's on the stove that's called the world and all of its complexities. But I have to say that the inner voice, at least my inner voice, has like this family tree. It's a stepsister to doubting, which of course is one of those hindrances, right? Doubt is a hindrance. And it's also a stepsister to the judging mind. And as close sometimes as, well, as far apart sometimes as stepsisters can be, sisters nonetheless, family. And just as an example of this that happened for me, in 2012, I was in a retreat, powerful retreat in St. Louis. It was part of the CDL, Community Dharma Leaders Program. And it was the fourth of a series of retreats, and the range of teachers were phenomenal, honestly. And here, the core teachers brought in Tara Brock from Insight DC, and she spoke, and Ralph Steele from Santa Fe, and he spoke. And then we were honored for 2 days with Kitasaro, who is an amazing teacher and a former monk under the Thai tradition, forest tradition. And here they were delivering this precious Dharma. And I remember at one point when Kitasaro was set down, and I had not ever met him, so I wasn't quite sure about what I was about to receive. He started to talk, and he has a Tennessee accent with a Oxford understanding, and he knows Pali so well, and he chants, and everyone was like totally blown away. So I saw everybody with a pen and paper. We were taking notes. And what I realized, at least for me, and I looked around the room, everyone dropped their pen. It was almost like dropping the mic moment, because how can you write transmission? The full transmission of the Dharma. So here I am listening to these masters of the Dharma. Their knowledge, their scholarship. I mean, I was just in awe. And I was like, oh my God, this is so great. And then there it started. The doubting mind. I can never do that. I can't even, what am I thinking? I can't even do a Dharma. Not like that. They're so much better than I am. And it started to run into all these comparisons. Right? Oh, look at them, they sit like this. You know, we've all had that, right? If you've been on retreat or you're sitting in a sangha, boy, they're real still, they must already be enlightened. And what became very clear to me was that doubting mind and that judging mind, those stepsisters of wise speech, were actually affecting me. And there was no way that I could actually turn away from my family members. They were just there on this tree of... And not only were there comparisons, but there were those questions. And most of them were the lack, what I wasn't good at. This is this inner voice, this inner dialogue that was going on. Am I reaching nirvana faster than anyone else? Or is everyone else levitating and I can't see it and they are already there? And I mean, it was a myriad of things going on. And that was my first recognition that there was this connection between the doubting mind, the judging mind, and the internal dialogue and the internal speech that was actually causing me harm. And I had spent, you know, we spend a lot of time in this idea of cultivating all of those wholesome qualities that we want, whether it's the paramis or the Eightfold Path. Whatever it is, we're cultivating, we're trying to get there. And what I'm doing now is I'm actually practicing in my own practice about what that feels like to strive. I'm striving to cultivate, and I'm not bringing my attention and my awareness to those places where there's a void, that I'm lacking it. So here I am striving to be skillful in my speech. Wise speech, right speech, however we want to name it. And what I'm doing internally is tearing down the fibers of my own being. Chatter, 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 chatter.
Chatter, chatter, judging, 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 judging.
And we do it in this place of unconsciousness. So here is a mind that is unattended, left to its own devices. And what happened to me, and happens, I assume, to some of you as well, it renders you a bit helpless. Mm-hmm. And maybe even hopeless. Will I ever be good enough? Am I saying the right things out here, but not saying the right things to myself? And given our propensity for this inner conversation, it really requires some very fervent effort to begin to look at it and examine it. But let's first, for a moment, look at the baskets that the Buddha so skillfully put wise speech. So there's these three baskets. One is the basket of sila, or ethics. The other basket is samadhi, or the basket of mindfulness. And the other basket is prajna, which is concentration, or wisdom. And wise speech happens to be in the basket of ethics, sila, moral virtue. Well, don't we want to actually cultivate that so that when we are out in the world, when we are talking to our friends, when we are at work, when we are with family, that we're actually using non-harming words? That's what we're striving for, right? I use the word not lightly. Striving to do that. And if we're striving to do that outside in the world, what are we doing in our internal world? That inner landscape that we also play in. That ethical compass that we actually have to turn a little bit to see which direction we're going. The Buddha explains in the Pali Canon, to get this light here. He says that as never speaking something that is not beneficial, and only speaking what is true and beneficial when the circumstances are right, whether they're welcomed or not. Can you actually practice skillful speech the right conditions, in the right place, to the right person, and walk away saying, I spoke skillfully? Can you do that? Mm-hmm. So can you use skillful speech with the right conditions, to the right person, and after the conversation has been had, actually take a breath and go, yeah, that was good. Not so easy. And I wonder why. And we're constantly challenged with that. How do we speak with others from authenticity? Mindfully, skillfully. And especially here in the Bay Area, where everything is pretty much politically correct. So we're walking a very tender line here. Sorry. We want our speech to be warm and compassionate. And we wind up putting a lot of conscious energy into that. I mean, I am now, given my practice, I'm very measured, I would say, with my speech. Because there was a time that my head would spin around and I would, what? That's not who I am today because of my practice and because of what I'm striving to cultivate. But it takes energy. It takes a conscious effort to do it. And if I'm doing that for others, what am I doing for myself? That's the big question. And now we have to actually journey differently. We have to begin to look, how intimate do we want to be with ourselves? How do we create a wholesome relationship with me? How do I treat not just my words, but also my thoughts as sacred? Why would I want to hurt myself, harm myself, be unskillful to me? This is where I think we have to really see that the rubber meets the road. If we can do this to others and really practice the Eightfold Path as a path to liberation, then we must be able to turn the mirror this way. To say, what are we doing for ourselves so that we can walk in this world in a wholesome way? As the Hopi Nation said, it's not the 11th hour, this is the hour. This is the time that we not only take the blinders off, but we actually turn the lens inside ourselves so that we know we are the ones we've been waiting for. And that we're gentle and intimate and kind to ourselves. So then we can muster up all that goodness. So we can then go out into the world and walk on this earth the way it is meant to be walked on. No easy task. But the Buddha has laid this out for us. And so often, I think I may have said this many times, I studied in a lot of different traditions. Grew up as a Christian, practice a little of this and a little of that, a little Taoism, a little, wanted to be a whirling dervish at one point. And I landed into this particular tradition in Buddhism. And I've stayed here for well over 20 years. But I didn't come to it because there was a guarantee for me of freedom. I came because there was the possibility of it. But what it required of me is to do exactly what we're talking about. Becoming intimate with each of these qualities that I want to now embody. Because theoretically I can talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. But until I truly embody it and begin to walk this way, as the I think it was rock and roll. I can't remember who it was.
Run DMC.
Yeah.
Rock
this way. Anyway, until I learn to walk this way, I'll never really become. And I believe that when I turn the lens this way, I want to be able to speak to the beloved in me with a softness and a tenderness and a kindness that I would like to also be, I would like to receive from others. I remember, I'll tell you just another quick story. I was well into my maybe late 30s or whatever, and my mother came to visit me. And I was a single mom, and she came to visit. I was working. I had soccer practice and all these other things going on. I came home from work really tired, and there she was sitting. She'd been visiting for about a week or two. She was from Atlanta. And there was no dinner started. And she'd just been watching, I think, Wheel of Fortune or something like that, which was okay, but I was just irritated. Right? I was just like, ugh. And she goes, well, what did you want me to cook? And I go, well, there's something in there. And, you know, and I was just on and on. And I was really snippy to my mom. I mean, snippy. I'm using that word as well. And she looked at me and she said, do you know what the golden rule is? I said, of course I do. I'm in my stuff now, right? do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I repeated it just like we were taught to memorize and then spit it out. And she took a moment in her wisdom and just sat there. And then she looked at me and she said, no, do you really know what the golden rule is? And I said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it was literally at that time in my life that there was a huge shift for me. This speech became a way in which I could communicate how I wanted to be spoken to. And it also became a way in which I then had to direct the mirror this way. If I want to be spoken to this way, out there in the world, I want to receive it, I also need to give it to myself. And this has been a lifelong lesson. So many of you may have heard of Christina Feldman, who is a teacher. She teaches at Gaia House in England, Dharma teacher. And I listened to a Dharma talk she gave around the judging mind. And she referred to a Sufi tradition that says that, and this is pretty common now, that there are three gates that you should pass through with each thought before you speak it. The first gate is it true? The second gate, is it helpful and necessary? And the third gate, is it rooted in love and kindness? So it's a quite profound tool to work with. And with my inner speech, I've gotten to this point where probably 8 out of 10 times I've been able to pass through the first gate. Is it true? Yeah, I'm going to tell you just exactly, whether it's you or me, I'm going to tell you because it's true. I'm going to go to the second gate. Is it helpful and necessary? Yeah, I'm going to tell you what's true and necessary for you. And let's say like this, right? I'm going to tell me what's true. I'm not worthy. I'm not wholesome. I don't compare. But I would say 10 out of 10 times, I don't get past the third gate. Is it rooted in love and kindness? I just don't get past that gate. And I'd like to actually invite you to think about that when you're listening to that inner voice. Is it true? Is it helpful or necessary for me to have that conversation? Is it rooted in love and kindness? And I'm real curious, at some point, if you get through all three gates for your external speech, skillful, wise, right, and for the internal speech. Skillful, wise, right speech. And another test for me around speech is actually, some of you, and most of you probably have heard of Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. Try to live by that pretty strongly, even in my home. And the first agreement is be impeccable with your word. And this is what he says. The word is not just a sound or a written symbol. The word is a force. It is the power you have to express and communicate, to think, and thereby to create the events in your life. You can speak. What other animal on the planet can speak? The word is the most powerful tool you have as a human. It is the tool of magic. But like a sword, with two edges, your word can create the most beautiful dream, or your word can destroy everything around you. Depending on how it's used, the word can set you free or can enslave you even more than you know. For me, I'm ready to take off in so many ways, in so many landscapes. I'm ready to take off the shackles. Those ways in which I have been enslaved through word, thought, and deed. The time of the lone wolf is over. I have to break out of this. And I have to turn inside and understand how what a sacred, beloved person I am and treat myself. So I invite you to witness how and what you say in private. How you share it between you and your own thoughts. So often in practice, bringing ourselves to this full awareness of meditation, and as Jack Kornfield calls it, loving awareness. We're somewhat taught to see the thought arise and watch it pass. See it arise and watch it pass, because it's not permanent. There's a sense of impermanence with the thought. And then maybe the thought arises again. Okay? And then the thought arises again. I invite you to witness what that feels like in the privacy of your thoughts about how you are speaking to yourself, about yourself, whatever that is. However you're addressing that sacred self. To reflect on whether your inner dialogue is based in love. To find ways to embrace your self-reflection with tenderness. I invite you to treat yourself with respect, compassion. Cultivate inward, skillful, wise speech. Let this just be an exercise for you. Let's say you try it tomorrow. No big thing. Just bring your awareness. When the chatter begins, when you start having this conversation, and we all do, having that inner conversation, I just invite you to witness it. Oh, there it is. Well, it's a little harsh. Oh, God, that's better. That was tender. Okay. Allow yourself to actually bear witness to what then arises. Stopping to reflect on the inner dialogue will actually look very different than the road that you've been taking. That sense of that unconscious state that happens. There it is, okay, I'm not, or I am, whatever that might be. This is a path we're all on. It's a path to awaken. And in order to do that, it takes practice and it takes a loving awareness to bring ourselves back. Just like in our meditation this evening, gathering back into the breath, coming back into where the anchor is. Just bring yourself to that place of acute awareness. Is it harmful? Is it true? Is it necessary? Is it rooted in loving kindness? And what about that innate goodness? What about that in you? Is there a light that gets to shine? Or does the flicker start to diminish with the conversation? Check it out for yourself. As the Buddha says, don't take my word for it. Just play in that field for a little bit and see. And the other thing I think that's important about the inner dialogue and that inner wise speech is also deep listening. We've got to bring both of those into play. Thich Nhat Hanh says in his book, The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching, about deep listening, many of us have lost the capacity for listening and using loving speech in our families. It may be that no one is capable of listening to anyone else. What a bummer. If that's true. And then he added, deep listening is at the foundation of right speech. If we cannot listen mindfully, we cannot practice wise speech. And it's even the listening intimately to ourselves. Thomas Merton said that the essence of the spiritual path is the search for truth that springs from love. We don't have to strive for any of it. It's right here. We have the capacity. And if we have the will to do it, is to actually flip everything on its heels. Oh, chatter. Okay, oh, that's what it is. Okay, let me bring it in a little closer so I can see you.
Ow.
Okay, let me be a little bit more tender. We have the capacity to do that. Change it. Not saying it's easy, but we do have the capacity to do that. There's a wonderful poem by Rumi called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. We have an opportunity and an invitation to actually play in this field of speech. Welcome it. Just like what we talked about right before this talk, let's take our blinders off and stay awake to all that's happening in the world and happening in this inner world. And see how it will be to walk differently in the world. Setting your feet on this ground, this sacred land. Being mindful of the judging mind. Knowing when it arises. There it is, I'm comparing again. Oh, he set better than I did. Oh, look at his car. He's got a Tesla. Which hasn't been getting good ratings. Paying attention to what's spoken and with our inside voice. I remember when my son was little, he would be loud or whatever out, and I'd go, oh, use your inside voice. I didn't know at the time that I was actually directing him inward. I was just trying to shush him up. But what I was really doing when I think about that, and now he's a grown man who, when you meet him, he'll say, hello, how are you? He uses his inside voice. At 6'4", pretty big man. Pay attention to that voice. Pay attention to the speech. Is there any kernel that might be harmful to yourself? And if you can witness that, see it, feel it, touch it, breathe it, let it go. Allow something else to arise that has more value for you. Again, why speech is in this bucket called virtue. It's a virtuous bucket that the Buddha has laid out for. It's tied to all of the other Eightfold Path. All of them have their interconnections, as do we with our families, our Sangha, our community. And most importantly, we have this interconnectedness with ourselves. I will end this evening with a poem by a poet who died just yesterday, W.S. Merwin. Oh. This is called Living with the News. Can I get used to it day after day, a little at a time, while the tide keeps coming in faster? The waves get bigger, building on each other, breaking records. This is not the world that I remember. Then comes the day when I open the box and I remember packing with such care. And there's the face that I've known well, in little pieces, staring up at me. It is not mentioned on the front pages, but somewhere far back near the real estate, among the things that happen every day, to someone who now happens to be me. And who can, and what can I do, and who can tell me? Then there is what the doctor comes to say, endless patience will never be enough. The only hope is to be in the daylight. So, homage to him. Thank you so much for your wise attention and your wise speech. And so we have about 5 minutes for any questions, and then we're going to read the metta cards. Okay.
about the source of the Arizona Elders quote. I would like to hear it or read it again and find it. I was wondering where that would be.
It's called "We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For." Actually, Alice Walker wrote a book with that same title. Yeah, but it's the Arizona Hopi. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but it is here. Yeah. It's a Hopi tribe, yeah. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
So, not so much a question, but oh my God, you hit so many notes. And I was just talking about this in a fashion with a friend at dinner. And one of the things I think I said to my friend was that antidoting the mind stuff, finding myself more often doing it, being more aware of it, sort of shaking my head and laughing at myself, saying, "Hi, Mom." thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Totally love you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's funny when we meet ourselves that way. Yeah, I meet myself in the mirror that way. And I say, "Oh, Marge." "Oh, no." It's no way. Yeah.
Thank you. Right speech has been my, I was going to say, unsuccessful attempt for the last 25 years of practice. So for me, the inner talk is regrets. I mean, you think I didn't do anything right, right? I mean, I know this intellectually. So, and as I'm doing it, as I'm doing this to myself, I'm saying, that was yesterday. You can't do anything about yesterday anyway. Why are you doing this to yourself? And the talk just keeps going. It's just, I sure hope I'm kinder to other people than I am myself. But thank you so much for your talk. It's been very helpful.
I just really, again, invite you to play in this field a little bit. Because you know it already. You hear it. And there it is, the inner voice. Just play with it a little bit in terms of a kinder way of greeting it. Oh. And not, "You can't do it," and so forth and so on, and "That was yesterday, and I've struggled with this for 25 years. Just meeting it a little softer. And see. I have a poem I didn't bring. I actually was reading it today. It was called "I'm Breaking Up With You, Shane." "Thank you, but I don't need you anymore." Oh, I don't know if that's the title of the poem, but part of it says, "I'm breaking up with you, Shane." "I'm breaking up with you, comma, Shane." Or regret. Put any. "I don't need you anymore, but thanks for coming." It was great. Yeah. And as Rumi said, welcome it. There's a reason why these places of even mental proliferation starts to happen. It's so that there can be some clarity that comes out of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I listened to a little inner dialogue as I was doing my walking meditation. And it was prompted by a very pretty Model S Tesla driving up into the parking lot. And my immediate reaction was, "He doesn't belong here. He's not going to stay. He's not one of us."
Ooh.
Exactly.
Good one. Let's talk about that one.
In action. Just as a side note, I was right. He did the same thing. But I got to see, you know, we started the whole conversation about us versus them, and there wasn't me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not void of this. I don't think that anything I've said is something that is just mine. I just want to say again, this has been such a delight to be here with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I am finding kind of home. I like it.
Please.
Yeah, so thank you so much for welcoming me back.
We're always glad to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please come more often.
Yeah, schedules permitting, I definitely will.